This is KUT Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT News, Austin's trusted news source. I'm Jennifer Staten. The Texas Book Festival is taking over the area in and around the state capitol in downtown Austin the first weekend in November. Almost 300 authors of all different genres will discuss their work in panels and interviews. Kate Winkler Dawson is one of them. She's a documentarian, true crime historian, podcaster, and journalism teacher at UT Austin. Her latest book, All That Is Wicked, A Gilded Age Story of Murder and the Race to Decode the Criminal Mind, chronicles the life of Edward Ruloff and the likely multiple murders he committed in the 1800s. Dawson says understanding his story can begin to unlock some of the mysteries of the modern criminal mind.
I think we're interested in the intersection of sort of normalcy with brilliance and then this psychopathy all mixed together. And I think it's unusual. I had forever thought that the very first instance of that was a Ted Bundy, which is why he is a little bit of the avatar of the guy next door, the charming man who turns out to be sadistic. And I then realized 100 years earlier, there's this man, Edward Ruloff, who was brighter than Bundy and had just this incredible amount of potential, could have really done well in academia. And he had other problems, which I believe were psychopathy. I think he had a personality disorder that compelled him to sabotage himself and to kill people. I don't think Edward Ruloff was born evil. I think things happened and he had these sort of latent ability to separate his needs from what in normal society we would say is not a good thing to do.
Well, and that's one of the big issues that his case and others bring up is this whole question of, well, are people born evil or is it a nurtured argument? Circumstances, things happen in their life that lead them to commit murders and other crimes.
I think what most forensic psychologists, psychiatrists would land on now is it's a mixture of nature and nurture. We know now that we cannot say that mental illness is what causes people to kill. That's not correct. Well, we know there are plenty of people who have mental illness. There are plenty of people who have antisocial personality disorder who don't go on to kill other people. But there are many times circumstances in their lives that trigger them. And so it's that sort of unfortunate combination sometimes is where we see a lot of tragedies happen.
So tell us a little bit about Edward Ruloff, who he was, and how he came to people's attention.
He initially came from Canada, and he snaked his way into this family when he arrived in upstate New York called the Scutts. You know, Ruloff was a self-made academic. He spoke more than a dozen languages. He studied language intently. He always had. He had an idea that he had found the pattern to the origin of human language, which in linguistics in the 1800s would have been a huge deal. Everything that he did was focused on supporting this academic research, which would be his legacy. So you find this man who presents as an incredibly well-spoken country gentleman, very verbose, very charming, who, with the flip of a switch, could turn around and kill you. If you stood in his way, if you presented a problem, he would absolutely remove you.
There was this ongoing discussion about, should he be executed, should he live? But people who were defending keeping him alive said that he's too smart to be executed.
You know, in the 19th century, innovation and education and big ideas were a really big deal. They were highly valued because, of course, not everybody had education. And this was a man who had so much potential and had claimed that he had found this and made this incredible discovery. So people say to me, well, it was debunked, but it didn't matter because he had convinced so many people that what he thought was valuable and he could offer something valuable that Mark Twain and Horace Greeley, who would later run for the presidency, and some really influential reverends, really influential people, said, why are we going to kill him? Why can't we just wait and see what he comes up with? I couldn't believe that they were having this kind of discussion about the death penalty several hundred years ago, 150 years ago.
Well, and those are still discussions today about the death penalty its appropriateness or applicability and why we do or don't use it.
I think it's changed a little bit. Now we talk about, is it really a deterrent? Is it helpful? What are our morals in this country? And of course, that's still what they said about Ruloff. You have someone with this incredible amount of potential. Can we just harness his brain for good instead of evil? And I think that his brain wouldn't allow him to do that. I think he could have collaborated with other people in academia and had perhaps come up with some really good theories in linguistics that would have given him this legacy he was searching for. Instead, his legacy is a brain that sits at Cornell University's Department of Psychology because it's so huge.
Remind us why it was so important to folks at the time to store his brain. Mm-hmm. There was a thought that looking at it was going to help understand something about what he had been accused of doing and what he had done.
His brain represented the beginning of neuroscience in the United States. When he died, a neurologist at Cornell University bought his brain and used it in comparative anatomy so that he could say, look at this brain. I know it's large, but look at the folds and the fissures, and let's compare it to the brain of someone who was meant to be below society, a woman's brain, a black man's brain, someone with mental illness. And he lined up all these brains and said they're structured exactly the same way. And it was the first time that that had really been declared. Everyone had always thought up until then that white men had the largest brains. And it was not the case. And it was thanks to Ruloff's brain that could show that this man who was both intelligent and a criminal, the structure of his brain was no different. Bert Green Wilder, the neurologist who bought his brain, believed that everyone was born normally, neurotypical. When someone would decide to commit a crime, a mark would end up on his brain that you could detect later on. And when he looked at Ruloff's brain, nope, no such mark.
Studying murderers, psychopaths, I mean, that's got to have an impact on you. Does that change the way you view the world or people? Or
I would like to say no. I'd like to confidently say no, but it absolutely, I certainly have driven to my favorite restaurant in San Francisco and thought this would be a great place to dump a body because it's in the middle of nowhere. I think the first thing I do when I go into a hotel room by myself is check behind every curtain and under the bed and everything. I'm not sure every woman does that. Also, we have to keep in mind that these instances of serial killers killing all of these people, it's really rare. It makes us feel like they're everywhere. It's really the person who you let into your life and who you love and you let them love you is who you have to be most concerned about. And that's why I have two daughters. And I tell them, you know, when you're picking friends and when you're picking people eventually that you're going to date, those are the people we really have to watch out for, that you're making really good choices. I do look at people a little bit closely when I meet them, but generally I think I have a really positive outlook on life.
Kate Winkler Dawson is a documentary producer, true crime historian, author, podcaster, journalism teacher at UT Austin. Her latest book is All That Is Wicked, A Gilded Age Story of Murder and the Race to Decode the Criminal Mind. Kate, thank you for your discussion today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.